The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
When Gooch gets back up into the pocket, like, I remember trying to practice this for about 6 months after I was nearly dislocated. He does it two or three times in the first half. It's sensational.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.
I'm delighted to say Philippe Auclair is with us. Philippe, good morning to you. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you very much. Good morning to you too.
So the group of death was nearly the group of death, and ultimately all the teams who we expected to come through came through, but not in quite the rude health that we might have anticipated. Where are France now, for example? What do you think about where they are?
Probably in a better place after last night's game than they were before in some areas. Still questions to be asked, and which are being asked in France, about some of the tactical choices, some of the personnel, but I think more or less they are more or less where we expected them. It's not entirely working. France has played perhaps two good halves, you could say. I mean, one good game against Germany, certainly first half when they were competing, mastering things, and then managed the game extremely well. Against Portugal, it was rockier, but that was expected. You know, Portugal had a much more aggressive team than the one they had selected for their first two games. Obviously, there's a little bit of needle between the two nations, as you know. There's a long history of rivalry between those two teams. Last of which, of course, was the 2016 final. And also, Deschamps has been changed his tactical system for that game, went from a 4-3-3 to a 4-2-3-1, put Tolisso in a kind of false winger role, which didn't quite work. But all these reservations put aside, the fact is Benzema scored twice, and the fact is that Paul Pogba confirmed that he truly is one of the world's best midfielders, at least when he's got the French jersey on his shoulders. So I think more reasons to be pretty optimistic, apart from the fact that the half of the French draw is pretty nightmarish, isn't it? But otherwise, I think satisfaction at the job, pretty well done.
Can we tease out some of the issues around the tactical side of things in terms of the criticism mm-hmm. that Deschamps is facing? What are the issues, and why is it not quite working at the moment?
Well, I think when you look at the game against Portugal and you look at where the threat was coming from France, and when you think of the amazing attacking potential that the team has, you'd be left a little bit frustrated at the lack of clear-cut chances created, even against, you know, obviously a very good Portugal team. But by using somebody like Corentin Tolisso, who's a genuine midfielder, as a kind of winger, or as I said, false winger, we call them in French, on the right-hand side, it means that on that particular side of the pitch was basically, we didn't create anything there. And I still think that we are trying to find a way to make the Mbappé, Griezmann, Benzema triangle work properly, in particular for me when it comes to Antoine Griezmann, who is a superb player, who showed it against last night, but we are not creating enough chances. Even with such a wonderful array of attacking talent, and it's left to Paul Pogba, which he does very well, to have these long passes, which he does very well, like the one which led to Benzema's second goal, which is absolutely magnificent, by the way. But it's a little bit, we're waiting for more from Kylian Mbappe in terms of the end product. We're waiting for even more from Antoine Griezmann, whom I think plays a little bit too far back. I'm not the only person to think that. And honestly, the way that the French team was organized against Portugal explains a good deal about that. I mean, this 4-2-3-1 is perhaps not the right configuration. But, you know, it was a try. It worked. It could not have worked. But the qualification was assured, of course. Some people would say that it would have been better to finish in second place anyway. So there are still areas in which there is work to be done and progress to be made, certainly for France.
The 4-2-3-1, Philippe, it may not get the best outcome for the team, but does it get the best out of Paul Pogba?
I think it was pretty good in the 4-3-3 in the first two games.
Sure. Yeah.
And the other thing as well is that if you imagine, and I think it is probably something we'll see more of as the tournament progresses, if you see in the role of a the right winger, so to speak, or the right attacking midfielder, somebody like Kingsley Coman, who came on and immediately had an impact rather than coordinatedly. So probably the system, I think, would be more efficient. But France is 4-3-3 with either Rabiot or Tolisso and Pogba and Kanté is in some ways more balanced. And France actually created more with that particular system. But it's a work in progress. And I think that when it comes to, I mean, the fact as well of having, sorry to come back on that, but on the right-hand side, the fact that Jules Koundé was actually selected ahead of Pavard to create a threat on that right flank, which was had been thought beforehand not to carry enough of this threat. And it didn't work. The relationship didn't work. So if this is put in place and functions correctly, then you will see a France which is probably more in tune with what Didier Deschamps is expecting. And I think that the one thing we have all got to say is that they were a bit frustrating. They've been a bit frustrating at times. The tempo has been a bit pedestrian. But if you look at the, I would say, the last 30 minutes of the game against Portugal, you would think that France is actually starting to rev up and going through the gears, which is the way that Deschamps usually does it in tournaments.
Okay, like that is the thing, isn't it? That the first game against against Germany just felt really significant. You have to win your first game to put yourself into that comfortable position. So, I mean, like they go back into must-win territory again from next week, Philippe. So you'd expect them to get back into that mode of the first game.
Yes, and if you look at their opponent, in a way, I mean, it's not, I mean, no disrespect to the Swiss, and this tournament has already proven on several occasions that to talk about lesser teams can be a bit dangerous. On the other hand, logic has been respected very often, and in this case, you would expect France to go past the Switzerland team, which has, I mean, I'm trying to remember the last time the Swiss beat the Les Bleus, must have been quite a while ago in a major tournament. You would imagine it's a perfect stepping stone for the quarterfinals, and then you can carry on this process. Afterwards, it becomes a little bit more complicated when I look at the draw. But yes, the signs are good. The team will be reassured by its performance last night. I don't think they will be super focused as they always are when it comes to meeting the Swiss. The France is not a team that makes the mistake of underestimating its opponents like Germany, for example, has done. I mean, they're in a good place at the moment. And I must say, I'm feeling much more optimistic today than I felt when I first talked to you before the tournament started.
What's the reason for the change in optimism?
Because I thought this group was a horror. And I was dreading that first game against Germany. I had always said that the game in Hungary would be extremely difficult, and it proved to be, if only because they were playing with genuinely 12 men, the Hungarians, and that after a whole year of COVID, playing in an arena full of 62,000 spectators would be quite a challenge, and it proved to be quite a challenge. And I thought the game against Germany could go wrong, and the games against Hungary could go wrong. So you can imagine what my thoughts were, that if after two games we're in a bad place, then all the criticism that people are waiting to unleash at the French back home will be unleashed. And people will say, you should have been taking Benzema to the tournament, and you should have put Giroud, and you should have done this, and you shouldn't have done that. And in this case, I think yesterday's game as well, this is another reason why I feel optimistic, is that yesterday's game and Benzema's double will have quietened a lot of people, a lot of apprehensions, and a lot of people, even if I have to say, and I hold my hand up here, that the penalty which gave Benzema his first goal after 5 years was an absolute farce, but that's a different match altogether. We'll take it.
The form of Kylian Mbappe is something that obviously the whole world is very interested in. Pre-tournament, we were wondering if this was going to be him stealing the tournament and putting the team on his back. It hasn't quite happened like that.
And
you've certainly been talking about this very consistently, about just there's something a little bit missing at the moment from the unburdened and the free-flowing Kylian Mbappe that we had maybe anticipated.
Yeah, and actually, particularly last night, was not particularly good, was he? In a big game, I do think, and I know that many people are obsessed about taxes and stats and things, telling me that it's not the case. But I do think that what's happening out of the field, is as important as what is happening on the field. And you can see it with Harry Kane as well. Players whose future is in the balance, especially at a time like now, always have a problem focusing 100% in tournaments. Always. And not consciously. I mean, Kylian Mbappe, when he's there, listening to the Marseillaise or singing the Marseillaise, is not thinking, should I stay at Paris Saint-Germain or go? That's not the way it happens. It's just the fact that they are not completely 100% engaged all of the time with what is happening. And it can show. There is also an element of he playing with PSG as Kylian Mbappe is not the ideal preparation for playing with France in an international tournament. The level of opposition that Mbappe faces week in, week out, except in the Champions League, is quite poor. He doesn't have to overstretch himself. Also, he's working next to Neymar. It's a very strange, it's like a bit of a circus act at times, if I'm absolutely honest. But suddenly he's in this setup which is completely different, and which is not necessarily geared towards making him the focal man. But he's so good, he's so smart, so intelligent, that I think it's another of those cases where you will see him grow through the tournament. I mean, remember in 2018, it's only as the tournament grew, I mean, progressed, that we started to see the real Kylian Mbappe. And actually, you would say he kept the best for last. And it perhaps has to do with his style of play. It perhaps the way we haven't been very positive. If you look against Germany, we did all that was needed, scored a goal, and basically closed our shop, shut up shop. Against the Hungarians, we created loads of chances against an opponent which we were expected to beat quite easily, but then we were shaken a bit. And against Portugal, the main axis was not the, we'd say, for example, Luka Hernandez, Kylian Mbappe, or it was Pogba, Benzema. And we haven't played to his strength yet. He hasn't had the space either in which to exploit his space fully, apart from a couple of occasions against Germany, perhaps. So all of these reasons, plus the fact that there is a certain amount of unease, I wouldn't say turmoil, but unease about his future, explains why, or is an attempt at explaining why we haven't seen the Kylian Mbappe we all know is there in this player. But we'll probably see him later on in the tournament. That's the way it goes with him.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting. The other big storyline from last night, Philippe, is the setting up of a classic in the last 16. So how ready are you for 4 or 5 days straight of England versus Germany build-up?
I know where the off button is on my television, so I'll be absolutely fine. But it will be unbearable. It will be unbearable. If you think how the build-up to the England-Scotland game was, that was bad enough. Now, to the England-Germany game, my goodness. Is it 5 days, you've said? Oh, my goodness, that's a long time. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it. It's genuinely two teams that I have no idea what they are and what they can be. So, and we're looking at every game of their tournament for a kind of response. And Germany was bad, brilliant, really bad. Brilliant next time, we don't know. England is very good, not so good, mediocre, quite good, you know, within the same games.
Yeah.
So we have no idea what's going to happen. But yes, it's the build-up is going to be interesting, especially in the current climate in Britain at the moment.
Well, that's the thing. So this game was supposed to be in Dublin, and it could have been Germany versus England with the Brexit backstop and the DUP issues all playing out on the streets of Dublin with the Irish Guards kind of, you know, daring the English hooligans to go. I mean, look... We certainly are thinking about what the alternative universe might have been in that case.
Yes, absolutely. Are we better off in the new configuration? I'm not too sure. The fact there is still the amount of people who can go to the game at Wembley at the quarterfinals is, you know, does change things somewhat when it comes to I say Wembley. Yes, it is Wembley. Sorry, I'm still trying to work out this draw. But the fact is, Wembley, we're going to have, 22,000 inside, because the number of spectators is only upped from the semis onwards. So it's going to be a long few days. And I don't necessarily think it's going to be that bad in the streets or in the between the fans. It's more in the media that the battle is going to be fought, and in the British media, I should say, much more than in the German media. I'm not looking forward to that. That's the least I can say.
It's interesting as well, Philippe, that we thought that throughout this tournament, when it came to some of the off-the-pitch discussions, everything would have revolved around taking the knee, and over the last couple of days things have changed considerably with the UEFA barring of the rainbow lights on the stadium in Munich. Obviously, it was just amazing to see Goretzka's celebration last night with the love heart, and obviously he's been so well spoken about his role as a sports person over the years on a range of topics, from race to sexuality and a whole other bunch of things as well.
This was come with a quote of the tournament.
Say that again?
He's also come with a quote of the tournament.
Which is?
Which is when Germany, which is, it's great to be in a country of 82 million potential national team selectors than 82 million virologists.
Yes.
Which is utterly brilliant. But it's Leon Goretzka. He's a superstar.
And a kind of a brilliant sort of slap in the face to UEFA as well, that celebration last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Well deserved. Bravo. The worst own goal that UEFA could have possibly scored. I think the time when UEFA were everybody's darlings after what their resistance, or so-called resistance to the Super League project, is now lost in the mists of time. They've managed to absolutely ruin everything with great virtuosity, I must say. Their statement yesterday, in which they attempted to explain their decision not to say yes to the request of the city of Munich, was a masterpiece of contradictions, because they basically said that on one hand, we acknowledged the fact that the rainbow illumination would not be a political gesture. I mean, we could discuss that. I personally think it's a political gesture, but a good political gesture, but that's a different matter altogether. But we recognize it's not a political gesture, but our decision was political. You think, well, hold on a minute. So you're telling us that we can't do this because it could be deemed as political, but you've taken a political decision to placate the regime of Orban. And actually, in Hungary, are you aware of the fact, UEFA, that a large proportion of people do not agree with the anti-LGBT policies of Mr. Orban? Are you aware of that? No, they're not, obviously. So it's a massive own goal scored by UEFA. And in a way, I suppose, sometimes you've got, again, to be the optimist rather than the pessimist, and say that the very stupidity of their actions will have put the spotlight even more firmly on the issue that illuminating the stadium in rainbow colours was about. So they've succeeded. So maybe thank you. I mean, as you said, the Goretzka gesture, which has been shown all over the world, will probably have an even bigger impact, because there was nothing like, we're going to, in a way, follow a trend or respect a movement which is shared by everybody. No, this was very much, I am telling you guys, that this is right. And that is much, much more powerful.
In a way, that's true. Probably most of the world wasn't paying attention. We should have been paying more attention to what was going on in Hungary. All of a sudden, far more people are galvanized to try and support the LGBTQ+ community in Hungary and are exercised about this. And you know, maybe that's the impact that we all needed, a little bit of a jolt that we needed.
But perhaps, and the fact as well is that the people in Hungary who are fighting against the imposition of those draconian rules and discrimination will have been heartened by the response to that. And that is also a plus. So again, It might be, we say, un mal pour un bien, something, we say in French, something bad, but it in the end produces good. And, you know, let's hope we take it from there.
Yeah, Philippe, as ever, merci beaucoup.
D'ailleurs.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.